check it out. We count so they hope at the world. Count friends for the roads of the prophets. Our shit we crush with guts, crack holes, and bones from bots. Intoxicated doors with the sadness of our mind. Shit's all this shit is jungle time.
Wake up, black people, wake up. All I'm gonna make them oppressed with. Step our neck. Don't you say that the ghetto we are crying dear. We have to get up, stand up.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." Well, we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the home page, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. That broadcasts out of the Black Belt, and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app, and in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for Awakening Media is there, always with the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, interesting conversation with one of the friends of the program and a very special guest, journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to The Herald, that's Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Brother Obi Ekpona Jr., will be joining us in conversation to talk about Venezuela, Haiti, U.S. involvement on the African continent, and all three of these locations, and how it directly impacts us here in the United States in the diaspora. Let's talk about these issues with Brother Obi Egbuna Jr. And we'll do that after we come back. We'll open the program after we come back from a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m., for podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, a Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elvin.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine as we, they trying to frighten us again. I guess that we're going to supposed to be snowed in or something, you know, got the warnings again. But besides that, everything is, I'm really, you know, really excited to, you know, do this exchange with Brother Oba, you know, because, you know, I've been watching what's going on in Venezuela and the different elections on the continent. And I just got the news about Haiti actually being, IT being given chair at the African Union. I mean, yeah, African Union. So that's an interesting development. So I just like to, you know, as we kind of kick around things around the global African world and our relationship to it, help us, you know, get some clarity on what's going on.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we have someone in the Time for Awakening family, so to speak, that can give us a perspective on these issues. Brother Obi has been here on several occasions before and talked about various issues, but some of these things that directly affect our people here in this country and in the diaspora, even though we don't get those type of perspectives on the national news or the television or any of other venues, we're going to try to get clarity here on this program. And I'm glad that we have a man like journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to the Herald, that's Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Brother Obi Egbona, with us this evening. Brother Obi, how are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Richard, listen,
yes.
I picked up Brother Obi the other day and took him over there to Mastery Charter School where Omar Wiley had his event two weeks ago?
Oh, okay.
And It was centering around the play that, in fact, before we start talking about some of these issues, Brother Obi, and we'll talk about it again before you leave the program. Talk about why you were in Philadelphia the other day when I picked you up.
Most definitely. Well, first of all, I have to thank my big brother, Russell Schultz, and who arranged it.
His
cousin, Sharif, our brother, Sharif Almicki, who's the principal at Mastery Charter School, Shoemaker. He had told them about the Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company, and also the Pan-African History Roving Classroom. So once they found out about it, they reached out and they said that they wanted us to come in February. So we came in on Wednesday of last week, and thank you so much for picking us up, and where we had the chance to meet for the first time face-to-face. And we taught five classes, and we focused, and we were in there with the eighth graders. And so we just did with them what we do at the Sankofa Homeschool Community, what we did at Roots Activity Learning Center and Roots Public Charter School for nearly 25 years, what we do at what we've done at Muhammad University of Islam for the last 6 years, what we've been doing in the South in Selma, Marion, Montgomery, Lowndes County, and now Birmingham for the last 8 years. So we just go in and we have some drills and techniques that we use to make African history embraceable. And so we focus on the modern and complementing the work of organizations like the Association for Classical African Civilizations. But, you know, we bring it up to date. And our theme is Africa yesterday, Africa today, Africa tomorrow. So we spend our time doing that. And the children were very happy. They were very embracing. They were very enthusiastic. So now there's a conversation about us having a weekly online class. And the way we have with the Aya Educational Institute in Atlanta, Georgia, and also through the work we do with the Liberated Minds Homeschool Expo in Atlanta, Georgia. And so we're looking to do that, but also on the new Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company play that we're going to do African Liberation Day weekend. It's called 1925, and it's going to be about the childhood of Frantz Fanon and Patrice Lumumba, both born in July of 1925. And of course, Omar Wiley, better known as Malcolm X, also born in 1925. So we're going to perform that African Liberation Day weekend here. Principal Elmeki likes the idea of trying to put it on there. There's some forces looking to put it on in Selma, looking to put it on in Guyana, and potentially Atlanta as well. So we're going to see how that goes.
Great.
So that's why we were. So that's why we were there, coming to work on the ground, because we know that there are many who go everywhere and they lecture, and the only time that people see them is in a community is when they're lecturing to that community, and they have no genuine desire to build working relationships with that community, only to pontificate to that community. So instead of complaining about that or targeting individuals who mock our struggle doing that, we might as well go ahead and be the alternative to that.
Richard, you know, that's one reason why I love Brother Obi, because this man is a wealth of information. And not only that, the man is out there working all the time. Richard, I don't know how he does it. I'm telling you, I just don't know. But
always, like
you. No, I'm not even in your ballpark, brother. I don't know how you do it. But I wanted to have you on, myself and Brother Richard, to talk about Venezuela, to talk about Haiti, and talk about how it relates to Africa, Zimbabwe, that South African region, because somehow this all links up. And the reason, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you on, because you've been working with brothers down there in Venezuela for a while. You don't just pop up and just start writing and knowing about this situation. You've been down there corresponding with those men. So what is
good? And have never physically been there.
Go ahead.
We've never physically been there. We've been invited, but we haven't gone as of yet. But I wanted to thank you because that is a segue. I was on a panel at the invitation of the UNIA in D.C., the Woodson Banneker Division, and we had a forum on Friday night, this past Friday, on Venezuela and Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And they had James Early from the Institute of Policy Studies, who's on their board, formerly on the board of the now-defunct Trans-Africa Forum. And so we were there to make the parallels on Zimbabwe and Venezuela. So, you know, when we come out, anytime we're invited somewhere, we talk about how we've contributed to the issues we are about to discuss. So many who heard us on Time for an Awakening before, they know our Zimbabwe work, but we'll deal with our Venezuela work real quickly. Many people, when they're looking at Comandante Hugo Chavez's work, as when he presided over Venezuela, and now how his comrade Nicolas Maduro, His Excellency, has assumed the mantle after the passing of Chavez 5-6 years ago, many people may not focus on the practical aspect of what they've done. Right now, there's been a movement brewing in the Americas called the Afro-Descendant Movement. And this Afro-Descendant Movement is by the additional 150 million Africans in the Americas, outside of the 45 million Africans that live inside North American borders, United States borders, who commonly refer to themselves as African Americans. These Africans have decided that it is no longer advantageous to say we're Afro-Caribbean. It is no longer advantageous to say we're Afro-Latino. It is no longer advantageous to use any of these things. Let us just say we're Afro-descendants. And one of the main engines behind that work is a beautiful son of Africa named Jesus Chucho Garcia. Jesus Chucho Garcia was the Venezuelan ambassador to Angola, which was the first embassy that Venezuela opened in Africa. And he also was overseeing the consulate that the Venezuelans had in New Orleans. And he was one of the ones deported because of what's transpired within the last couple of months. But he was given an assignment by this movement to create a curriculum telling the story of Africans in the Americas for future generations to benefit immensely from. And so our children would know of our resistance, not just inside the United States. They would not confine their understanding of chattel slavery and our captivity to Jamestown, to the Carolinas, to Mississippi, to Alabama. They would be just as familiar with our resistance in Cuba, our resistance in the Dominican Republic, our resistance in Haiti, our resistance in Nicaragua, our resistance in Ecuador, our resistance in Honduras. So this is the work he was doing on behalf of the Venezuelan government. And so we've been working with him. So we took him to Selma 2 years ago because he had spent the first 20 years of his networking almost exclusively with university academicians. And we told him if he wants to get under the hood of the engine and deal with the Africans, like at Mastery Charter School, like at Ujamaa Shule, Muhammad University of Islam, certain forces in the public schools, he must come with us. So 2 years ago, we took him to Selma so he could begin to network with educators in the elementary area, middle school area, high school area. So that's one aspect of the work. The Battle Cry for Cuba, Zimbabwe project that we have with M1 from Dead Prez, if you listen to the third volume, there are three offerings from a group called Bituaya. They are the number one hip-hop group in Venezuela. They are the Dead Prez and Public Enemy and Boogie Down Productions of Venezuela. But they don't say they're Venezuelan. They say they are Yoruba. So their style, their hip-hop style, is immersed in Yoruba culture right out of Nigeria. So we work with them there. You have gotten me to discuss my father on this show before.
Mm-hmm.
My father, for people who do not know, is the co-founder of the Black Panther Party in London and is the playwright and author whose book, Wind Versus Polygamy, published in 1964, which was chosen by Britain to be their offering to the First World and Arts Festival in Dakar, Senegal, in 1966, is what many people consider opened the door for African literature in Europe. And Soyinka and Achebe benefited immensely from that, even more than my father ever did. But with that being said, that's neither here nor there. So his PhD at Howard University was on the role of African epistemology and literature and the decolonization process. And Chucho Garcia, who we're talking about, as he's building this network with educators all over the Americas that are African, he's saying that the philosophical foundation must be African epistemology. So when we presented him with my father's dissertation, he has agreed to take it to the University of Caracas in Venezuela and get it translated in Spanish so that the students there who are studying that discipline can gain some direction from my father's work. So that is just some of our work with Venezuela. So that way, when people are saying what made them select him to be the one to discuss tonight, Venezuela, and also the Venezuelans were in discussions with us to establish a memorandum of understanding between the Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company and the children's ensemble that they have in Venezuela that they're developing, which they are modeling after La Comunita, which for people who know Cuba's history is the National Theater Ensemble for Children in Cuba, which we too have a memorandum of understanding with.
Brother Obi, before I pass it over to Richard, go back, because you kind of went by that a little quick for me, and I didn't catch that, and I don't know whether our listening audience caught it. You said that the Venezuela appointed this Brother Garcia. Because it was a movement that was started quite a while ago to stop using those other labels and just call themselves descendants. Go over that again.
He was picked as the person to develop the curriculum to say that our story in the Americas is one.
Okay.
He's the leading proponent for that movement. But the political front on it is saying that it makes no sense for Africans in the United States, 45 million, to fight alone. There must be a strategic political relationship between the Africans and the 191 million Africans that exist within the Western Hemisphere. And of course, that puts you on a collision course with the Democratic and Republican Party because of their white supremacist definition of America, which is so fascist that it would make Hitler and Mussolini envious if they were still amongst us today. So they're saying the true definition of America is the geographical one, North America, South America, Latin America, the Caribbean, Western Hemisphere, to be precise, taking you all the way to Canada, and saying that the political base for Africans, whether they want to build their own party, like the Africans did in 1908, Partido Independiente de Colo in Cuba, just following that sentiment. So saying that we the Africans in the Americas, 191 million strong today, must close ranks and on an active level, on a political level, in the relationship to resistance, it must begin to manifest itself in the work we do in the field of education, in the work we do in the field of art, in any business linking we do, and of course, political organizing.
You know, Richard, that's why I'm kind of glad we had Brother Obi on here, because what he just stated, I had no clue that this movement was even going on and started in Venezuela. Did you, Richard?
No.
Go ahead.
What I wanted to ask, though, is this tied to, and I understand that there's a, well, there's two things I see going on that I wanted to get clarity on. The International Decade of People of African Descent, which came out of the UN, which is a 10-year.
It is most definitely tied to that, but it is actually the work that caused that to be done. Okay. Because that was done in concert with the recognizing of the indigenous people as well. So what the UN did is they utilized the platform of the UN. But the reason that we decided, we know that's more popular, we know that that's more visible, but it's very important for us to always talk about grassroots efforts. Mm-hmm. So that's a grassroots movement there, and Venezuela is more invested in it than any other country in the Americas. That is one of the other reasons that U.S. imperialism is targeting Venezuela. In addition to their socialist direction, in addition to their relationship to Cuba, in addition to their relationship to the anti-imperialist movement globally, it is because of their strong nationalist and Pan-Africanist direction. It is very strong.
Which is interesting as it relates to, you know, what's going on within a certain level of the American context, American African context, as far as this whole dialogue of dissent. I'm gonna use that term.
Of course,
which would seem like a struggle, right? But
I was told we'll get into that later, but that is being set up to sabotage. That is what that's being set up to sabotage, because the way you stop genuine resistance is you create watered down alternatives to it. Mm. Yeah, so that's all that is.
And the other aspect of it, and I'm trying to get the brother's name, that is also from a legal perspective, petitioning through the decolonization process for under the Afro descendants to place within the UN that there's a legal, not a legal approach for decolonized Africans in America to decolonize themselves from the American nation state.
Of course. I mean, that's, once again, you know, that work's been going on a long time. We always tell people that, and this is the latest manifestation of what the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey did in 23, going before the League of Nations, what Du Bois did in 47, on behalf of the NAACP, even though Eleanor Roosevelt, being on the board of directors of the NAACP, did everything she could to stop him. And of course, before Malcolm could do it in 65, he was taken out by the FBI and CIA. So. So it continues. So we're glad that people were able to utilize that platform at his disposal. But when we were introduced to Chucho, he already knew about our work. But we were asked to get into the process because we were asked to begin to pull in educators and organizers around the area of education that did not teach on college campuses. So we were able to connect them to homeschool groupings. We were able to connect them to the independent school groupings. We were able to connect them to different groupings within the public school circles. And we brought them to the South, because anytime that you're talking about our efforts to be empowered, we're talking about this African cultural and historical reclamation movement, which is really the third leg of after what happened in Harlem with the Harlem Renaissance, what the Black Arts Movement did, what in conjunction with what Agnès Sékou Touré did in Guinea with the cultural renaissance there, which is the reason that Africans in this country have these dancing and drumming ensembles and don't even want to acknowledge the role of Sékou Touré in that. But this here is the third leg of that. So because we developed a very good relationship with them, us understanding the history, us understanding the strategic advantage of taking this beyond the college campus, we took Brother Chucho specifically to Selma, because every year when they have that jubilee, which is where I would be tonight, but I didn't go this year, they have an education forum. So Dr. Adlai Sanford, who was considered one of the queen mothers of the movement to educate our children, she comes in. She's tied to that project there. Dr. Tony Browder, he's tied into that project there. Dr. Ray Winbush, he's tied into that project there. Dr. Chike Akua, he's tied into that project there. A brother named Dr. Robert White, who we're going to introduce you to, who teaches he was the only professor in the country now that teaches African-American studies and the humanities together at Alabama State University. He's tied into that. And actually, him and I are the main ones who actually physically go into the classrooms and teach the children, as opposed to just coming to Selma and participating in an annual forum, dealing with strategies that we can utilize that can be more effective. So we felt it was of paramount importance to bring Chucho Garcia there so that they could have exposure to him, and he could begin to let them know about what he's doing on the hemispheric level. And of course, they embraced him when he came, and we were glad that we were able to introduce him to many different people there. Because the one positive thing about that Jubilee is the networking potential, because the many people who converge on Selma annually is endless, unlimited potential. So many people perceive it on the outside, oh, that's just a gathering of civil rights folks. It is not that. Africans who doing work in the church are there. Africans doing work in the field of education are there. Africans doing work in the field of the arts, they're all there, recognizing the historical significance of Bloody Sunday, regardless of how you perceive it to be on the spectrum, they come there. So we recognize it was very important to bring Chucho there.
And that conference was this weekend?
It happens every year, the first week of March. First weekend of March, yeah.
March, right, okay, because I remember
seeing it. And they're honoring Hillary Clinton as we speak, so obviously we couldn't be there this year.
which
too close for comfort.
Which speaks to the struggle we have, and another reason, Elliot, why we need to have, you know, Brother Obad to kind of help us center
my
this.
Name is name is Obi.
Obi, excuse me.
No, it's okay.
To center this, quiz. What you're describing is broader hemispheric movements that are going on around the cultural education, which are not necessarily being developed. And what you say, Elliot, all the time, that are people, because the names you mentioned in education that are assembling, that are people who are actually doing work. I mean, all the people that you mentioned are people who are actually doing work around this effort.
Which is why you teased me a few times ago when I was on the show, Richard. You asked me how come we're not we don't participate in certain forums, you know, the ones that are in D.C. that have a national scope and character, while we're not on the panel. We knew you were being lovingly facetious, but it's perfectly okay, because what we have to understand is they are forums that are set up for executors of ideas, and their forms set up for articulators of ideas. And as Nkrumah taught us so long ago, practice without thought is blind, thought without action is empty. So one of the biggest challenges is to have that harmonious blend between the theory and practice, because resistance must have direction. So it's perfectly okay. And as a matter of fact, if the deck is going to be overwhelmingly stacked against us, we're the only executors and we're surrounded by articulators, that might not be the best look strategically speaking anyway. So it's all right. Not a problem.
If I may, because as you bring up about executing and looking at Venezuela, because some would say that Maduro's in executing of and moving towards not nationalizing, but tying the wealth development to the oil reserves is a action that is truly also outside the West. Now, yes, I mean,
Of course. But to understand this thing, I mean, there are a couple of factors that we have to start with. First of all, you know, we have to start with the failed Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961 in Cuba to understand Venezuela. The reason I say that is because Kennedy let it be known emphatically that what makes Cuba most dangerous to them is not just the ability to maintain a socialist revolution, but to inspire others to follow in their footsteps.
Right.
Based on that logic, based on that perception of history, based on that adherence to history, you see how quickly they dealt with Allende in Chile in 1973, quickly. You see how 10 years later, you see how they dealt with Maurice Bishop in Grenada quickly. You see how they dealt with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua after they disposed of the Somoza family, who had controlled the politics of Nicaragua for 70 years, which was the closest thing to what Papa and Baby Doc did in Haiti. So Venezuela being up, knowing what they would be facing, knowing what they were up against, they recognized that the intensity against them, it would come. So they understood that. And of course, and to understand what Chavez was doing, to understand what Maduro was doing, you must go back to the administration of the reactionary leader, Carlos Andrés Pérez. And what we're speaking of specifically is the economic policy when they talk about neoliberalism in the Americas, where which is an extension of the annexation of the Americas by the United States of America. And there's a particular institution in Venezuela that we want people to know of. It's called the Institute for Advanced Studies and Administration. The Spanish name is Instituto de Estudios Superiores de Administración. And they guided the, and Juan Guaido, who is the main opposition leader, the president of the National Assembly, who the Trump administration is saying they recognize now as the leader of Venezuela, he graduated from this place. And not only that, he got a postgraduate degree from George Washington University. And the reason that I'm bringing up this place is people who go there are called ESA boys. And the school is modeled after what happened in Chicago, where the economist Milton Friedman and Arnold Harbinger trained a group of Chilean economists who were the economists that ended up controlling the economy of Chile under the military dictator, the U.S.-backed military dictator, Augustus Pinochet. And even though Guaido has been in the headlines, everyone knows him now, the two most dangerous Venezuelans on this planet are Ricardo Haussmann and Moses Niang. And they are the ones working in the United States. And they are working to push him. And Moses Niang was born in Libya, ironically, and he was Venezuela's Minister of Trade and Industry during the Perez administration. At this moment, he is a distinguished fellow with the Carnegie Endowment for World Peace. He's a member of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Atlantic Council, the Inter-American Dialogue, and the World Economic Forum. And he wrote a book called The End of Power, From Boardrooms to Battlefields and Churches to States, Why Being in Charge is What It Used to Be. And the two people who promoted this book are Bill Clinton and George Soros. George Soros' words are, this extraordinary new book will be of interest to all those in leadership, positions, business executives, politicians, military officers, social activists, and even religious leaders. And Niang is on the board of the Open Society Foundation. And this is very interesting because the two main Africans in our community who are speaking out about U.S. regime change in Venezuela happen to be Danny Glover and James Early, who I spoke of earlier, representing the Institute for Policy Studies. So George Soros finances the Institute for Policy Studies. So the question bears, how can anyone who says that they're against regime change in Venezuela be part of an organized formation taking money from Mr. Soros when the main Venezuelan working to overthrow the Maduro government sits there on George Soros' board of directors? If Danny Glover and James Early are confronted with this question, you will recognize that this is something that comes second nature to them, because when they were on TransAfrica Forum's board of directors, they were funneling National Endowment for Democracy money to 14 civil society groups in Zimbabwe. And ironically, of the 400 civil society groups in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe has more civil society groups on the ground than any country in Africa. George Soros finances 350 of the 400. And George Soros now openly finances the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions and openly finances the Movement for Democratic Change, which is the opposition created in 1999 to bring about regime change in Zimbabwe, financed by the Westminster Foundation for Democracy, which is the British and United States government's front cover. So it shows you that even though Trump is public on the Venezuelan question, even though Mike Pence, the vice president, public, going as far as to go before the Organization of American States, asking for Venezuela to be removed from that process. And of course, the Secretary of State, Pompeo, if I'm saying his name correctly, he's on record as well. Many people don't talk about George Soros' role, who supposedly, based on this superficial spectrum, is supposed to be on the left. And if you're talking about George Soros on the left, you must be talking about anatomy, not political ideology. So you're talking about his left arm, his left leg, his left kneecap, his left ankle. There ain't nothing left about that right-wing pig.
Well, we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Oh, man, you know, when you talk about demons and devilish governments, boy, I'm telling you, that's why I'm glad we have this brother on with us tonight. We'll be back to continue this conversation with journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to the Herald. That's Zimbabwe's national newspaper. Brother Obi Igbona is with us this evening. We're going to take a brief break. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
New age is upon us, yet the past refuses to rest in its shallow grave. For those who hide behind the false image of the Son of Man shall stand before God, 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 God. It has begun, the beginning and the end. Yeah. Voice of racism preaching the gospel is devilish. A fake church called the Prophet Muhammad a terrorist. Forgetting God is not religion, but a spiritual bond. And Jesus is the most quoted prophet in the Quran. They bombed innocent people trying to murder Saddam. When you gave them those chemical weapons to go to war with Iran. This is the information that they hold back from Peter Jennings. Cause Condoleezza Rice is just a new age Sally Hemings. I break it down with critical language and spiritual anguish. The Judas are hanged. The guilt of betraying Christ, who murdered him, stole his religion, and painted him white. Translated in psychologically tainted philosophy, conservative political right-wing ideology, glued together sloppily, the blasphemy of a nation. Got my back to the wall, cause I'm facing assassination. Guantanamo Bay, federal incarceration. How could this be? The land of the free, home of the brave, indigenous Holocaust, and the home of the slaves. Corporate America, dancing offbeat to the rhythm. You really think this country never sponsored terrorism? Human rights violations, we continue the saga. El Salvador and the Contras and Nicaragua. And on top of that, you still want to take me to prison. Just cause I won't trade humanity for patriotism. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking, causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view of the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government wants us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Read about the history of the place that we live in, and stop letting corporate news tell lies to your children. Flow like the blood of Abraham through the Jews and the Arabs, broken apart like a woman's heart abused in a marriage. The brink of holy war, bottled up like a miscarriage. Embedded correspondents don't tell the source of the tension, and they refuse to even mention European intervention or the massacres in Jenin. The innocent screams, U.S. manufactured missiles and M16s, weapon contracts and corrupted American dreams. Media censorship blocking out the video screens. A continent of oil kingdoms bought for a bargain. Democracy is just a word when the people are starving. The average citizen made to be blind to the reason. A desert full of genocide where the bodies are freezing. And the world doesn't believe that you're fighting for freedom. Cause you fucked the Middle East and gave birth to a demon. It's open season with the CIA bugging my crib. Trapped in a ghetto region like a Palestinian kid. Where nobody gives a fuck whether you die or you live. I'm trying to give the truth and I know the price is my life. But when I'm gone, they'll sing a song about immortal technique. Who beheaded the president and the princes and sheiks. You don't give a fuck about us. I can see through your facade like a fallen angel standing in the presence of God. Bitch niggas scared of the truth when it looks at you hard. It's like MK Ultra controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening with your host, Brother Elliot. Sundays, 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation this evening talking about Venezuela, Haiti, and the African continent, and how it directly relates to us here. And we're doing it with journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to the Herald, Brother Obi Egbona Jr. Before we get back to the conversation, Brother Obi, I just want to read this for the listening audience. It's a demographic of Venezuela. It says the official estimate of those with pure African ancestry in Venezuela is 10 to 12% of the total population. About 60% of all Venezuelans, however, claim some form of African blood. African Venezuela culture is acknowledged and is an important component of the national identity. Now, that's what is acknowledged on online in reference to Venezuela. So we can see here that the overwhelming majority of those people there are of African descent, which kind of ties in with the whole conversation of what you're talking about now.
Of course. And it reaffirms what we've said for many years now, that it can be argued and confirmed that the first form of public transportation was the slave ship. No question about that. So this is why supporting them, defending them, their territorial integrity, what they represent historically, what they represent presently, it's not an option, it's a historical obligation. And we're all about historical responsibility. So yes, you're correct.
It was one thing that I wanted to unpack in what you said in relationship to George Soros, and I apologize for me with names, but and the whole Institute of Advanced Studies, which the opposition person is United States is trying to implant into Venezuela. You said that. Did you say that? What's
the name? No. That school exists in Venezuela. It is the economic equivalent of the School of the Americas. The most reactionary economists from all over the Americas always came there to learn neocolonialist and neoliberalist economics so they could go back to these neocolonialist and neoliberal governments and make that the foundation of the economy for those countries. The thought process, it was modeled after a program at the University of Chicago that was overseen by none other than Milton Friedman. And it was a program that was pushed and that first saw light in Chile. Those economists that were trained in Chicago went back and they helped Pinochet and his family steal all the money from the Chilean people and reverse all of the policies for the revolutionary direction of the Allende government. So Juan Guaido, that is the opposition leader to Maduro, he went to that school. And the people who are his advisors, Ricardo Hausman, who I didn't get to talk about, I talked about Moses Niang. Ricardo Hausman was the first chief economist of the Inter-American Development Bank. He's Venezuelan. He was the minister of planning and worked in the president's office during Perez's second administration. He was the chair of the World Bank's Development Committee. He was also the chair of the Latin American Caribbean Economic Association, which gets grants from the Global Development Network and the World Bank's Grant Development Facility. So this is who he is. And also, in addition to that, he right now, as we're having this conversation, he is the director of the Center for International Development and the professor of practice of economic development at the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. So these are the two main Venezuelans behind this boy Guaido. So you see Guaido's face all over CNN, all over C-SPAN, all over BBC, all over Al Jazeera, but we don't really know who Niang and Hausman are. But they're the ones trying to make it happen for him. And it's the same model that has been used in Zimbabwe, where you have people like the former Minister of Finance, Tendai Biti, coming to Washington, where you have the son of one of the only Caucasian members to start MDC, David Coltart. His son, Douglas Coltart, comes and he's a Uhuru Fellow at the International Republican Institute. And his wife, Chloe McGrath, the South African Boer, was the African director at the Atlantic Council, another reactionary think tank. And it's the same thing. And so they were the ones who were the brains behind Nelson Chamisa, who was the defeated candidate in Zimbabwe running against President Mnangagwa and ZANU-PF. And coincidentally, it is George Soros' money that is pushing the demonstrations in Harare and pushing the demonstrations in Caracas.
And the reason, and that was the point I was getting when you wrote about George Soros and Danny Glover. Because I think you were raising that there's a contradiction there.
Yes, it is.
I just wanted to be clear that.
Yeah, because Danny Glover is using the banner with the collapse of Trans Africa, with when Trans Africa shut down their operations. James Early and Danny Glover were already connected to the Institute for Policy Studies, but the Institute for Policy Studies is, you know, that's a George Soros thing. So the fact that they are sitting there having programs talking about Venezuela and the bellicose of the Monroe Doctrine, which sounds militant, which sounds progressive, which has even some revolutionary overtones. But at the same time, Moses Niamh is on George Soros' board of directors. So it lets you know that how much can Danny Glover and James Early push the envelope. And this is happening at a moment in our community where we're attempting to make a quantum leap in our understanding of U.S. foreign policy, EU foreign policy. What I'm speaking of in particular is we're going from COINTELPRO to OINTELPRO, covert intelligence to overt intelligence.
Right.
So the Open Society Foundation, the National Endowment for Democracy, the National Democratic Institute, the International Republican Institute, all of these, the United States Agency for International Development, they are doing out in the open what the CIA used to do in the dark.
Go ahead, Richard.
No, it's one other, because this is a regional voice that I haven't heard in relationship to Venezuela, and I appreciate you making a connection to Zimbabwe, and that is the community of Latin America and Caribbean states.
This is what's been going on. When Mike Pence went before the Organization of American States and asked for Venezuela to be removed from that body, it's the same thing that the Bush administration did in 2003 with the League of Commonwealth Nations and asked that Zimbabwe be suspended from that body. Zimbabwe was suspended from that body and decided to withdraw altogether. When we met President Mugabe, former President Mugabe, National Liberation Hero, President Mugabe, for the first time in 2003, when we had the honor of meeting him, he said to us, you know, I only have one criticism of our sisters and brothers in the United States when they look at Africa, and it's a concern. And I want you to relay this to them every opportunity you get. We said, of course, tell us what you want us to say. He said, they have a very romantic and sensationalist and adventurous overview of the coups and assassinations in Africa. He said they pay too much attention to the actual coup and the actual assassination and very little attention to the process to isolate a country to make them vulnerable for a coup or the assassination of their leader. Uh-huh. And if you look at the process, so they understand imperialism must isolate Venezuela. So they developed this process called the Lima Group. And the Lima Group is a group that is out of Peru. And these were the entities that were being used to isolate Venezuela. And even Haiti recognizes Guaido, and it said the government of Haiti. And they're saying that they no longer recognize Comrade Maduro. So this is why this had to happen. But what it is it's a counter to something that Venezuela did 5.5 years ago. Venezuela challenged something that is so important to the United States government in terms of what they want to do. And what we're speaking of is the United States Agency for International Development, which was created in 1961. What ended up happening is the Lima Group, who was supporting the ousting and regime change in Venezuela, consists of Argentina, Brazil, Canada, Chile, Colombia, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Guyana, Honduras, Mexico, Panama, St. Lucia, because they said they refused to recognize Maduro's victory in the elections. So that's the first thing you have to know. And the reason that we compare that to Zimbabwe is because every time that the United States and European Union have approached the Southern African Development Community, the umbrella that makes up the 13 nations in Southern Africa, to isolate Zimbabwe, they have failed. As a matter of fact, former President Mugabe told us in the same sit-down that the U.S. and EU imperialism assumed, with Chissano stepping down with Mozambique, with Kaunda being ousted from power, with Nkapa Nyerere being removed from the Tanzanian scene by biology, they assumed the new grouping of moderate leader, who they considered moderate in Southern Africa, would support regime change in Zimbabwe. And if you go back to 2005, 2004, I believe, or in that time frame, the EU was doing a road refurbishing project in Malawi. And when the President Mutharika said that we recognize we're going to name the road in honor of Robert Mugabe, the European Union said, if you dare do that, we will pull out right now of this road project, basically leaving the roads with big giant potholes. And Mutharika said, you don't understand African custom. You can never disinvite one you've invited. You can only disinvite those who've invited themselves. And then a few years later, the president, Mwana Sasa, in Zambia, let it be known, when there was the Africa-EU summit in Portugal, the former British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, said if former President Mugabe came, he would not come. And all of SADC told him, hey, look here, if Mugabe don't come, ain't none of us coming. How you going to have an EU-Africa summit and Southern Africa's not at the table? And so this is something that the whole regional isolationist piece must be understood. And also, they are angry with Venezuela because Venezuela is part of a group called the Bolivarian Alliance for Our Americans. Cuba's part of it. Venezuela's part of it. Bolivia's part of it. Nicaragua's part of it. And they said 5.5 years ago that no country in America should allow the United States Agency for International Development to have an office. And right around the same time, Vladimir Putin expelled the United States Agency for International Development from Russia. But 10 years before that, in Eritrea, Eritrea threw them out of Eritrea. And President Afwerki said, we'd rather starve than let you feed us. So this is also the broader ramifications of this issue are very important. And one of the things that Pence was protesting, which the Obama administration, which imposed sanctions on Venezuela, suggested, is they were a threat because they were adopting a Cuban-style constitution. But Bolivia stood up, Nicaragua stood up, St. Vincent and the Grenadines stood up, St. Christopher and Nevis stood up, and Haiti abstained. We were suspicious there. The Dominican Republic abstained, Grenada abstained, Trinidad and Tobago abstained, Antigua and Barbuda abstained. But we already knew that they were going to use the OAS platform, which they tried to do. And it was right around that time that President Maduro called Brian Naranjo, who was the deputy in charge of affairs. He said, you're not a diplomat. You're the head of the CIA in Venezuela. And he said that Todd Robinson, he talked about how they were interfering in Venezuelan politics, violating the diplomatic accord. So that's what's been going on the last couple of years. But Venezuela is prepared to deal with this. They are equipped to deal with this. They knew that this would come. They anticipated it. And, of course, the other connection with Zimbabwe and Venezuela is in 2003, late Comandante Hugo Chavez gave former President Mugabe the Bolivar Award, which is Venezuela's highest political honor, which is modeled after the Martí Award, Cuba's highest honor. And President Mugabe is the only head of state in African history, former President Mugabe, to get both the Martí Award and the Bolivar Award. So, and the Bolivar Award is a sword. So, yes, we stand with Venezuela. And the other thing I want to get into at some point is what this also exposes is the racism within solidarity circles in this country. So you have white activists marching for Venezuela, protesting around Venezuela, which we're glad they're doing that. But they're acting like what's going on in Zimbabwe ain't even happening. But it's a pot, but it's light at the end of the tunnel, because it should be Africans who carry that fight to the finish line.
I agree.
Brother Obi, let me, because I want to transition into other people mm-hmm. having undue influence over black folks. And I'll kind of mm-hmm. set that up with this. And I'll use a historical perspective on it, and I'll get you to clear me up if I'm wrong, because you're a journalist. You be out here. You just said that you were on a panel with James Early.
Yes, I was. Let's
flip back to W.E.B. Du Bois. When the formation of that NAACP, if you look at some of his later writings, mm-hmm. he kind of regrets that, and I'm just kind of breaking it down to layman's terms. Okay. I think that he regretted being used by Spingarden and other whites that didn't really mm-hmm. have his agenda at heart. And it came, okay. he came to find out later that they were, that they mm-hmm. were using him for their agenda. Now, let's flip it.
Yeah.
Well,
somewhat. Yeah. That's not too far off.
Now, let's flip it over to now, because you mentioned mm-hmm. about Early and Glover and others being mm-hmm. involved with Soros, who
and Carlos Gershman and the National Endowment for Democracy.
Okay, now
who started off as a social democrat working with Bayard Rustin, and after Bayard Rustin got to messing with those, well, let's get into it. Let me let you finish.
I'm telling you.
Go ahead.
Well,
I'm
just wondering whether. You know, you talk with these men, and you were on a panel with one of the men on Friday. Do you think that they really understand that it's a potential? I'll just put it that way, just to be nice, mm-hmm. that there's a potential that they're being used by these people?
I'll answer that in one sentence. We know that there's a difference between rape and consent. So if you openly worked funneled National Endowment for Democracy money to Zimbabwe in the early, in the early part of this millennium, and you openly did it, and you worked in conjunction with Donald Payne, the late congressman for the Congressional Black Caucus, who was considered the African expert, who was on the board of the National Endowment for Democracy and on TransAfrica's board. So he's the bag man. And then you end up funneling this. You set up something called the Zimbabwe Solidarity Fund. And it's TransAfrica, Africa Action, and the Priority for Africa Network. And you're openly doing this. How don't you know? And then you now come and you see what George Soros is doing in Venezuela, and you see what George Soros is doing in Zimbabwe, yet you have a strategic partnership with them. But we will never speak. That's for James Early to speak on. That's for Danny Glover to speak on. That's for Harry Belafonte to speak on. So when they're in our community and we're showering them with all this praise, hopefully some who are in those audiences have the temerity and integrity to raise this with them right there on the spot and see how they deal with it. And we will be willing to do a platform with Danny Glover anywhere, anytime, to deal with this question of Zimbabwe and Venezuela. And as a matter of fact, to be honest with you, when the UNIA told us they put this together, we didn't believe them. Not that we didn't believe that they put it together, mm-hmm. but we were surprised that Early knew we were going to be there and agreed to come.
Okay.
Because on this question of Zimbabwe, because, Zimbabwe is the elephant in the room. People who will raise Cuba, raise Palestine, raise Venezuela, raise anywhere else on the planet, when Zimbabwe is part of the equation, they don't even like it to be part of the conversation. So in many cases, we're forced on the panels or what have you. And we push the envelope very aggressively, as you know. So I wouldn't have been surprised if he canceled. Horace Campbell, who teaches at Syracuse University, who canceled four interviews with me on the question of Zimbabwe. The former director of TransAfrica, Bill Fletcher, canceled three radio appearances with me on the question of Zimbabwe. So we're used to this. We're used to it. So when he decided to come, I was very happy to see him.
So let me ask you this. Well, how is Zimbabwe now in the framework? And you just raised a point that gave clarity in relationship. I just seen that Haiti is
going to give
given a seat at the AU. How is Zimbabwe positioned at the AU? Because it seems
thank you so much for that question, Brother Richard. First of all, what has changed in the AU? Let's go back to the beginning. The AU, formerly the Organization of African Unity, is nothing but a tactical compromise. And it was a tactical compromise where we were seeking to have one unified Africa. But you had those who wanted one unified socialist Africa, and there are those who wanted Africa to be one unified neo-colony. So obviously they couldn't put their heads together. So the agreement was one group met in Casablanca, the capital of Morocco. The other group met in Monrovia, the capital of Liberia, for those who know that history. So when you understand that, but what has happened, because the whole region of Southern Africa has stood firmly behind Zimbabwe, whenever reactionaries from other parts of Africa, heads of state, attempt to attack Zimbabwe, the whole region stands up and tells them to shut the hell up. You saw this 11 years ago when Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, one of the darlings of U.S. imperialism, the former president of Liberia, when she came and she tried to attack Zimbabwe, the head of SADC at the time, Pohamba in Namibia, said, if you're so interested in Zimbabwe, you come to the next SADC meeting. When Blaise Compaoré, who assassinated Thomas Sankara in cold blood, tried to come out against Zimbabwe, they told him the same thing. So, and the fact that when Mutharika of Malawi was the chair of the AU, it was his turn, he put the question of lifting sanctions on Zimbabwe on the floor. When the former president of Tanzania, Kikwete, put it on the floor, when he was the chair of the AU, he raised the question. And because one of the main movers and shakers inside EU circles is former South African president Thabo Mbeki, who brokered the power-sharing agreement between ZANU-PF and MDC, the question of sanctions on Zimbabwe and them letting the rest of the AU know that that question wasn't up for compromise, it wasn't an issue. Haiti having a seat at the AU, an observing seat, that's symbolic, that's fine. But because Africans all over the world, what that recognizes is we recognize the importance of the Haitian Revolution in 1804. It has nothing to do with Haitian's government today, but also how the people are being trampled today. So that's more about what that represents, to be honest with you. But the fact that on a diplomatic front, because Zimbabwe, because of their military pedigree, defeating the second most powerful colonial army ever assembled in Africa, fighting off U.S. imperialism's reinvasion of the Congo in 1999 in partnership with Angola's military and Namibia's military, deploying 50,000 troops to Mozambique to help the great Samora Machel, and that liberator of Mozambique, to fight off RENAMO, which was just as crucial to stabilizing Southern Africa as Cuba sending troops to Angola to fight off UNITA with our comrades in MPLA. So, but because of that military pedigree, people underestimated that they would make the quantum leap to deal with diplomatic guerrilla warfare, which they have. And they say that the first line of defense is information. And it is for that reason when we went before the U.S. Institute of Peace, which is the number one think tank in this country, which the State Department even takes its cue from, when Chatham House, the oldest think tank in Britain, came there to Alex Vines, their Africa program director, came to give his paper on Zimbabwe. Johnny Carson, the former Assistant Secretary for African Affairs under the first Obama administration, the former U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe under the second Clinton administration, the highest ranking African to serve on the National Intelligence Council, which is the strategic arm of the CIA, which gives the CIA strategic direction, when to invade a country, when to assassinate a leader, that type of thing. This man, Johnny Carson, openly said that Zimbabwe has defeated them in the propaganda war, and it's because of a bunch of ragtag journalists outside of Zimbabwe, with me sitting right in his face. So he's talking, obviously, about me. He's talking about Bafo Ankomah with the New African magazine. He's talking about our comrades in Australia, our comrades in London, who've been doing this work, in addition to, of course, what the Herald is doing, in addition to what the Patriot is doing, And it also magnifies the question because, and we always take them to town when we try to bring this up, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and now the Trump administration have said that there's no free press in Zimbabwe. But the overwhelming majority of newspapers in Zimbabwe are opposition newspapers. The Financial Gazette, the Zimbabwean, the Zimbabwe Independent, the Standard, the Mail and Guardian. These are opposition papers. It's primarily the Herald and the Patriot and the paper of the ruling party, the People's Voice, which people are just starting to read again, that actually are about defending the territorial integrity of Zimbabwe. As a matter of fact, the Zimbabwean, the paper called the Zimbabwean, is run by a family who were agents for the Rhodesians during the revolution. But they allowed them to have a paper. And we always say to the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, to the Congressional Black Caucus, whoever we're talking to that supports regime change, how many papers were in the Congo under Mobutu? How many papers were in Cote d'Ivoire under Houphouet-Boigny? How many papers were in the Central African Republic under Bokassa? How many papers were in Haiti under Papa Doc and Baby Doc? How many papers existed in Chile under Pinochet, the governments that you openly supported? You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So this is how we're able to challenge them and embarrass them whenever they try to come to Zimbabwe. And now since Zimbabwe and Venezuela put us in a very strategic position to close ranks and do some serious work. And of course, when we're dealing with this, you mentioned outside forces, we have to talk about the role of Zionism in this process.
You know, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because when I raised that question about undue influence over some of these black quote-unquote leaders, let's look at the same undue influence that's used over not only leaders but political leaders. You had the leader of the State of Israel running around the continent late last year to get a seat on the African Union and lobbying African countries to let Israel open the doors to Israel, so to speak. In your opinion, as a journalist, do you think that our people here need to have a unified voice against Zionism? Because you see that anything that is mentioned in relation to Zionism is being attacked uniformly.
Let me tell you something about your brother.
Go ahead.
And you know, I hate doing the biographical thing, but this is only in the context of work. In 1991, in my early 20s, I was part of an organization called the United Pan-African Front that became the Pan-African Student Youth Movement. We were the only student youth organization inside the United States. Well, they were two. The Black Consciousness Movement, which modeled themselves after the BCMA in Zaire, South Africa, who at the time were the youth wing of the December 12th movement. We were the only youth contingents that were part of the Worldwide African Anti-Zionist Front. And in November of 1990, this organization, this umbrella was created in Tripoli, Libya. And it was organizations from all over the African world that decided that the time to deal with this was necessary. But of course, we're students of history. So we know that during Brother Malcolm's time as the national spokesperson of the Nation of Islam, he got Muhammad Speaks off the ground. And there was a segment in the paper every time it came out that kept us up to date on the Palestinian question. As a matter of fact, in the final call, what is called the Middle East Report by Ali Baghdadi is an extension of that work, even though that's not mentioned, for people who may not know. If you go online and you look at Malcolm's pictures at the UN, there's a picture with him and a brother named Ahmed Shukari. He, not Yasser Arafat, was the first chairman of the Palestinian Liberation Organization when it was formed in 1964. If you know the history of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, when they came out against Israel, their resources were frozen. They supported Gamal Abdel Nasser and in the Six-Day War of Israel. And as a matter of fact, when Brother Malcolm was poisoned in Egypt/Kenya, he had written an article in the Egyptian Gazette called Zionist Logic, where he said that Ralph Bunche was your Messiah. if anything, because of the work he did logistically to bring the Zionist State of Israel into fruition. And in relationship to Africa, during the days of the now AU, then the OAU, you know that they had what was called the Liberation Committee. And when you look at the Liberation Committee, every time they had a meeting to give the liberation movements in Southern Africa, they were fighting. FRELIMO fighting in Mozambique, MPLA fighting in Angola, ZANU-PF and ZAPU fighting in Zimbabwe, SWAPO fighting in Namibia, ANC, PAC, and ZAPO fighting in what's called South Africa. Yasser Arafat would come personally and give messages of solidarity. But so this question of Zionism is something that we've dealt with for a long time. But that worldwide African anti-Zionist front, which lasted from about the early 90s to the mid-90s, was the most militant response to Zionism at the time. And it was the most pan-African response, revolutionary pan-African response to Zionism. I mean, PAC was part of it. ZAPO was part of it. Democratic Party of Guinea was part of it. All these groupings all over the world, Comrades in Sudan, Eritrea was connected to it. All these forces were connected to it. And ironically, when you look at it, the issue inside the borders of the United States, the All African People's Revolutionary Party became the chair of it. And so every time Kwame Ture would come here on his speaking tour between the end of January and the first week of April, he would try to recruit organizations, primarily in the nationalist movement, into it. The Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, then under the leadership of Kwame Afo, they joined. The December 12th movement joined. The New African People's Organization joined. The Nation of Islam did not join, but they were there at the initial observer meeting. So at the time we were younger, we approached Khalid Muhammad to raise that question with him. After we gave Malik Shabazz the money through UDC student government budget, through U.S. UDC student government budget to do the first program he ever did with Khalid Muhammad. And this is Rolls Royce driving Khalid Muhammad. This is fur coat, Rolex watch wearing Khalid Muhammad, still in the Nation of Islam at the time. Not when he went on to the new Black Panther Party. And so Kwame Ture was trying to push the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to deal with this question. At the time, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan had a meeting with Edgar Bronfman, the head of the World Zionist Congress, arranged by Mike Wallace of 60 Minutes. Around that same time, it was his 60th birthday, he played a Mendelssohn concerto. So he was seeking to have public dialogue with the Zionists. Around the same time, Cornel West and a Zionist named Michael Lerner did a book about Black, what they called African-Jewish relations, of course, using the word Black. This is how, and this is right around the same time that Cornel West has the book Race Matters. But, of course, in our community, we already knew when we looked at how Jesse Jackson's campaign was compromised by the Zionists. We saw how Nelson Mandela, for meeting with Arafat, had to answer to the Zionists. So we recognized this question a long time ago. And this is why actually what we're calling for now, we want the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Harry Belafonte, if his health permits him, and Cornel West to come and do a platform with us in Washington, African Liberation Day weekend, to discuss how we should be dealing with the Zionist question moving forward. And on the question of Zimbabwe, it's the Zionist Tom Lantos that was the only Holocaust survivor, as it is called, that was a member of Congress. He's the one who pushed the Congressional Black Caucus to vote in favor of the sanctions on Zimbabwe. He's the one who brought a senator, an articulate, naive senator named Barack Obama, to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to denounce Zimbabwe back in 2007, which was followed up by President Obama, then a senator, writing former President Bush a letter begging him to maintain the sanctions on Zimbabwe till the dark cloud of Mugabe and ZANU-PF was ousted from power. So it's a Zionist vindictive because of Zimbabwe's relationship to the Palestinian question. And as a matter of fact, when Zimbabwe's turn to chair the Southern African Development Community, the Palestinian ambassador to Zimbabwe was there. So when you look at Zimbabwe's relationship to Palestine, Namibia's relationship to Palestine, Mozambique's relationship to Palestine, we understood this question, but because we deal with it not only within the borders of the United States, we want the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, not in a debate, a discussion. And we would be sitting next to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, because ideologically that's where we belong. But on the other side of the table would be Cornel West and Harry Belafonte, because if you know Belafonte's history, he's the most pro-Zionist organizer in our community, always has supported Israel. He canceled his tour with Mary McKeever because of their Grammy-winning album, their folk album, because Palestinians and other Arabs had approached her, because Belafonte, if you've ever seen him perform, he always sings a song called Hava Nagila, which celebrates the Balfour Declaration. For your listeners who don't know what that is, Lord Arthur Balfour of Britain set up a declaration which laid the foundation for the Zionist State of Israel to come into existence, which was a follow-up to the creation of the Zionist movement, which was created in 1897 by Theodore Herzl. 12 years after the Berlin Conference, because the Zionists were the only Europeans with colonialist aspirations that were excluded from Berlin. And they were first looking for land in Kenya and Uganda and Switzerland, but then, in order for the masquerade to come full storm, decided to settle on Palestine. And of course, Zionism is a direct enemy of African people. As a matter of fact, we told Dr. Tony Browder we want to do a workshop with him for children called Africa Yesterday, Africa Today, Africa Tomorrow. And we tell him, while you're in Kenneth digging up the remains of Imhotep, or digging up the remains of King Tut, or digging up the remains of ISIS, go and dig up the remains of the Africans who died when Zionist Israel bombed Kemet in 1967. Their remains should be dug up too. And as a matter of fact, Israel opposed self-determination for Algeria, opposed self-determination for Tunisia, and openly supported and gave military assistance to the Rhodesians in Zambia and Zimbabwe, to the Boers in South Africa, and to the Germans in Namibia. So Palestinian solidarity, which we will continue to have, is only scratching the surface, like DJ Premier scratches hip-hop records. Zionism is a direct enemy of African people, and we want to come everywhere the Zionist question is raised and do forums with people who are dealing with the Palestinian question. And lastly on this is because in 2001, when you look at anti-Zionist resistance in the African community, you have to go pre-Durban and post-Durban. Because many people, when the United Nations Conference on Racism, Xenophobia, and Other Related Intolerances took place in 2001, and Bush, doing his best impersonation of Julius Caesar, forbid us to talk about slavery, Palestinian, and Palestine, and reparations, as you remember. But what happened is many people who then hopped on the bandwagon dealing with Palestinians, we're glad they did it, though. Many of them had no track record prior to that of dealing with the Palestinians. So we already recognize these are Democrats who just want to thumb their nose up at Bush the Republican. They're not necessarily invested in the Palestinian question. And we've always said, as Jimmy Carter masquerades as the white liberal savior of the Palestinians, we refuse to let him do that because he's been trying to bring about regime change in Zimbabwe. And as a matter of fact, if he would have made Reagan honor the Lancaster House negotiations, made Clinton honor the Lancaster House negotiations, made the Bushes honor it, we wouldn't have had to physically reclaim the land, because they would have honored the U.S. would have honored the agreement, and Britain would have honored the agreement. But Zionism is definitely connected to this issue, especially dealing with African liberation. And once again, we want to, if everything works out, if they accept, we would love to be sitting right next to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Dr. Cornel West, and Harry Belafonte to discuss this question as honors.
We're going to take
African Liberation Day weekend.
We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to The Herald. That's Zimbabwe's national newspaper, Brother Obi Egbona Jr. We'll be right back.
are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
You have the emergence in human society of this thing that's called the state. What is the state? The state is this organized bureaucracy. It is the police department. It is the army, the navy. It is the prison system, the courts, and what have you. This is the state. It is a repressive organization. But the state, and well, you know, you've got to have the police, because if there were no police, look at what you'd be doing to yourselves. You'd be killing each other if there were no police. But the reality is, the police become necessary in human society.
You know how we think. Organize the hood under our chain banners. Red, black, and green instead of gang bandanas. FBI spying on us through the radio antennas. And I'm hitting cameras in the street like watching society. With no respect for the people's right to privacy. I take a slug for the cause like Huey P. While all you fake niggas try to copy Master P. I wanna be free to live, able to have what I need to live. Bring the power back to the street where the people live. We sick of working for crumbs and filling up the prisons. Dying over money and relying on religion for help. We do for self like ants in a colony. Organize the wealth into a socialist economy. A way of life based off the common needs. And all my comrades is ready, we just spreading the seed.
Yeah. Live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough.
more bondage, no more political monsters, no more secret space launches. Government departments started it in the projects, material objects, thousands up in the closets. Could have been invested in the future for my comrades. Battle contacts, primitive weapons out in combat. Many never come back, pretty niggas be running with gas. Rather get shot in they back than fire back. We tired of that. Corporations hiring blacks, denying the facts, exploiting us all over the map. That's why I write the shit I write in my rap. It's documented, I meant it. Every day of the week, I live in it, breathe in it. It's more than just fucking believe in it. I'm holding in ones, rolling up my sleeves and shit. It's CeeLo for push-ups now. Many headed for one conclusion. Niggas ain't ready for revolution.
Your average black male, live a third of his life in a jail cell. Cause the world is controlled by the white male. And the people don't never get justice. And the women don't never get respected. And the problems don't never get solved. And the jobs don't never pay enough. So the rent always be late. Can you relate? We living in a police state.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:40 on Sunday evening, Eastern Standard Time. We're in conversation with journalist, playwright, and U.S. correspondent to The Herald. That's Zimbabwe's national newspaper. Brother Obi Igbona Jr. is with us in conversation. And we've been talking about various issues tonight. Richard.
Yes, yes.
I want to play a clip that you that you sent to me. A man that Brother Obi is very familiar with, and I want to get your opinion. I kind of surmise your opinion on what he's saying. I think what he's saying is excellent. But I'll play it for you, Brother Obi, let me cue this up.
Okay.
If I can find it, here we are. Here we are. Here we are.
Africa, we are one. There's no one who must be allowed to divide Africa. Our struggle is to liberate the whole of Africa. We want the resources of Africa to benefit the people of Africa and not the West and not the East and not those who come outside Africa. Let us go and help Africans to get their land, to get their minerals, and use their minerals for the survival of the African continent. If you hate Zimbabweans, or you are not going to vote for the EFF because I say we must love Zimbabweans, please do that. If you are not going to vote for us because we love ourselves so much, then you can go away with your self-hating vote. Rinaria getata papa. Mazimbabwe ke mira. Hari lebeleti Mazimbabwe rebona siponi. Reakepona. Hari lebeleti any African, a Nigerian, a Ghanaian, all over. Reakepona rena self. Because a pain of Africans, it's our pain, not only here, even abroad. Those in the diaspora, those people are suffering. They're harassing them. They've got no rights. In America, it's even worse. That Donald Trump hates Africans. Africans are suffering everywhere. When they come back home, you still make them suffer. Why? What did these Africans do to you? Let's protect one another. Let us be one thing. Let us love our continent. Let us fight for our continent. Let Africa one day realize its own freedom. Let Africa one day stand on its own feet and say, I own my minerals. I own everything that belongs to this continent. Let Africa alone be able to say, enough is enough. Away with colonialism. Away with imperialism. Let the unity of African people reign supreme in all of us. We are Africans. And we are not going to apologize about that. We will defend the Zimbabweans. We will defend Africans in our townships because we are one thing. This is our continent.
Brother Obi.
Yeah.
You know that's Julius Malema.
Yeah. What year was that?
I'm not
recent.
Yeah, that was recent.
Yeah, he's preparing for the election. The EFF. I think that was their EFF. Like the conference.
That had to be a couple of years ago, because since then he's changed his position on Zimbabwe. He said that everything beautiful in Zimbabwe is Chinese. And when the regime change agents last year were having demonstrations in the streets, he sounded in favor of it. And that is because when he went to London a few years ago, he did a photo op with Robin Renwick. And for those of you who don't know who Robin Renwick is, Robin Renwick was the British Foreign Secretary and that worked directly with the Rhodesians and was ambassador to South Africa during the apartheid era. So that it's nice to play that, because we have to hold his feet to the fire and figure out what he really represents. Is he for Zimbabwe, or has he changed his tune? And I'm glad you brought, and I'm going to deal with this real quickly because I want to get back. We've said before in this show, there are people who are genuinely trying to build a movement, and there are people who are seeking to build their reputations at the expense of our movement. And in terms of South Africa, what's called South Africa, we need to hear from the young people who are trying to rebuild the PAC, the young people who are trying to rebuild the ZAPO, who are responsible for making the land question number one in South Africa, as opposed to people who jump ship from the ANC because it looks like they couldn't get the leadership positions that they wanted. And then after that, began to throw themselves in front of the question of land because of the political mileage. So he used former President Mugabe for photo ops. And it appears now that he has a different position on Zimbabwe. That's why we wanted to know exactly when that was done. And he's someone else we'd like to be on a podium with to deal with the question of Zimbabwe and how it segues to the rest of Africa.
You know,
anytime, anywhere, same thing for him too.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned about personalities and a movement, because this land question, because we read a report a couple of weeks ago on Time for Awakening that I think it's averaging over 100,000 whites a month that's leaving South Africa and relocating to Australia because of this issue that has been pushed by the people, which you just mentioned, some of the on the ground activists that has been pushing this issue. Those are the people that have, you know, those are the people that we really don't hear about or come in contact with. The people that we see generally is the ones that draw the cameras, but the ones that are pushing these issues on the ground are the ones that's really making these is the fuel that makes these engines go. I just want to say that of in course. Reference to the
no, I mean, and that's very important, because when I did the Rock Newman show not too long ago, and they were asking me in the room preparing, do I even know him? And that type of thing. Do we work with him? And we let him know since our days, one of our first activity contribution to the struggle to support the liberation movements in Southern Africa was in 1990. We organized the DC funeral for the great Zephaniah Motsepe outside of Nelson Mandela, the longest freedom fighter in prison on Robben Island, and was sent back to Robben Island because he was the tactical advisor to the Soweto uprising. So our connections to PAC and the ZAPO go back to 1990. As a matter of fact, when I used to go to New York City, I used to stay with the Sebeko family, David Sebeko being the foreign minister for the PAC, who set up their network at the United Nations. So PAC and the ZAPO were severely compromised by the years that they were outside of the country. And we just want to see the young people, you know, because things change all the time. We want to see the young people, if that's what they're talking about, banging on podiums and flapping your gums and talking real loud, that what you eventually find out is what a person is fighting for. And the last thing that I'm going to say about that is, it's not just a question of the land. It's a question of, will the people have the land distributed to them? And will the people be the beneficiaries of the land struggle? Because we see in Southern Africa, there's a class struggle that took place. It's the reason that President Mnangagwa stepped up and dealt with the G40 cabal, as they are called, in Zimbabwe, who were Malema's running buddies. People like Xavier Kwashiorkor and Patrick Chiwawa, who were more interested in how they looked in the morning than dealing with the issues of the people, who went around saying that I was an intelligence agent because I was in Zimbabwe working on the ground. And then you look in Angola, the daughter of Dos Santos is the first African woman to be a billionaire in Africa. Imagine how the Cubans feel who came to Africa to give their lives to defend MPLA. So was Dos Santos' whole role for getting in MPLA was to one day make his daughter a billionaire? What's his name? Ramaphosa in ANC is a billionaire. So we can't have millionaires and aspiring billionaires lead a poor people's movement. And the land reclamation movement in Africa is a poor and exploited people's movement. So people who are just exploiting the mileage of the issue, I'm not too keen on listening to what they say, especially when we see how he openly exploited Zimbabwe for political mileage. But when he felt that ZANU-PF might be out of power, he starts to condemn Zimbabwe for being too close to the Chinese. So, you know,
let's
moving forward.
Let's grab a call.
But I wanted to say one more thing about Zionism.
Go ahead.
The Pan-African connection.
Go ahead.
The same Tom Lantos who pushed the Congressional Black Caucus to vote in favor of sanctions was the same Tom Lantos that went before the Congress in 1990s and called for a repudiation of Khalid Mohammed. So that's the same individual. So they may be people who wanted to hear me make that parallel. So I'm glad I wanted to make that, especially since we talked about the fact how we approached Khalid Mohammed about pushing the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to get the Nation of Islam to be part of the worldwide African anti-Zionist front. And lastly, on the question of Zionism, the reason that the Zionists strategically target the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam is because the two masking agents for Zionism is they masquerade as a race of people and they masquerade as a religion. If you're a Zionist, you're an atheist. Theodore Herzl, their founder, was an atheist. So how can you say you believe in God, but then don't believe in God, but then say you're in pursuit of land that God chose for your people, which is the equivalent. And so true Jews are very enthusiastic when we attack Zionism, because any real Jew feel every time they hear the Zionist state of Israel being championed, they feel as disgusted as any Christian who watches the Ku Klux Klan burn a cross. Same dynamic. So it's very important for us. And there's no such thing as a Muslim race, a Episcopal race, a Presbyterian race, a Catholic race, a Christian race, a Buddhist race. If you submit to the tenets and principles of that belief system, you can become one. That's why Sammy Davis Jr. had no problem telling you he was a Jew. It had nothing to do with Israel, the Zionist state. It had to do with the belief system. And since Judaism is the first monotheistic religion, belief in one God, Africans gave that to the world, we are historically obligated and morally obligated to defend Judaism from Zionism. And we're willing to come anywhere. And for those who want to apologize to the Zionists for standing next to the Palestinians or exposing their work in Africa, the atrocities in Africa, we say save the apologies for Anita Baker. She sounds much better apologizing anyway.
let's go to 757. 757, question for our guest.
Yeah, gentlemen, first of all, I applaud his command and detailed explanation of what's going on. And all I will say to try to add to this conversation is he has completely deconstructed the use of what this country calls soft power to lay down the groundwork and try to avoid military intervention. He has completely gone over the entire history, and we as a people here in this country need to understand that. that those organizations he talked about, like the Council of Foreign Affairs, the USAID, all of those things are sold to us as benevolent organizations, when in fact, since 1952, when the CIA came up with NGOs, they are indeed the tip of the spear when it comes to imperialism creating itself across the globe. I applaud your wealth of knowledge, and I can tell you I'll probably listen to this about four times to pick up the morsels that I missed. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call, brother.
Isn't it nice hearing you, too?
Thank you.
Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing, brother?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Hey, Brother Richard.
Yeah, no.
Hey, Brother Obi. How you doing, good brother?
What's up with you?
I'm doing fine. All praise be to Allah. You know, before I talk about Zionism, as you know, Brother Obi and Brother Rich and Brother Elliot, yesterday, black folks again took an L, you know, which is a loss. L stands for loss from the criminal and justice system. As you well know, out in the state of California, the white female prosecutor, attorney general out there, she said that she's not going to file charges against the two devil cops that killed Stephon Clark. And out in Oklahoma, the attorney general out there said the same thing. They're not going to file charges against the white female officer that killed Terrence Crutcher. So, again, you see black people take a L. Now, I'll say this, and when you saw the react, when you saw the female attorney general out in Sacramento, the white lady, blonde hair, from what I heard, she's a mother. See, this is why I be telling you all the time, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. See, we always focus on the white man. We know he a devil. We always focus on him. And that's well and good, because he is a devil. But see, we make the mistake that we underestimate his female counterpart. Now, here, you would think that this white woman out there in Sacramento, who's a mother, you would think she'd be empathetic towards Stephon Clark's mother, because she's a mother. But it don't matter, because they are just as vile and hateful and vicious just as the male counterpart is. And then, as long as we keep on not focusing on that, we're going to continue, you know, be a day late and a dollar short. That white female is no joke, bro. She's just as dangerous as a male counterpart. But as long as we don't keep on missing out on that, we're going to continue to get it. But anyway, I'm going to move on to Zionism. Brother Obi, Brother Otis said before me, you make some very strident points, because this is what I've been telling Brother Elliot and Brother Richard for a while. When you look at Harry Belafonte, who's a brother who has did some great things in the black community, but see, Harry Belafonte suffers from a lot of black people, and even some Caucasian people, they suffer from biblical ignorance. See, when you say how Harry Belafonte is pro-Israel, because he, in his twisted sort of way, he thinks that these devils are God's chosen people. And Brother Obi, I saw that in my life as a member of the Nation of Islam and a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I have ran into black folks, even some well-learned ones, some maybe not so educated in terms of the school system, whatever. But they go to these churches, and they actually think that these white folks, who number your peers, Ashkenazi Jews, which they are not natives of Palestine or Semitic people, if you will, but because they've been so biblically ignorant and brainwashed, they think that when you speak against Israel, when you speak against those white imposter Jews, you speak against God's people. So Harry Belafonte may be suffering from that. It's like you see so many other people suffer from that. They say they're going against God's people when they criticize Israel. Because I had a brother, I say this real quick, Brother Obi, I told Elliot and Richard this story before. When I was working at the hospital in Jersey, I had a Christian brother who was a maintenance worker. Nice brother. Do anything for you, Brother Obi. Get the clothes off his back. I was talking to him one day. This was during one of the uprisings in Palestine where they killed a bunch of Palestinians. You know how they do on the mainstream media. You could have 60 Palestinians killed. This is how they desensitize our people. You could have 60 Palestinians killed, and it won't even do a blip, but let one or two Israelis die, and then it's like the whole world coming to an end. So when one of these incidents happened, the brother Henry, he came up to me and said, Joe, oh, man, I know what's going on over there. It's wrong. He said, I hate to see that. He said, it just bothers me. He said, you know, as a Christian brother, I know they're over there killing these Palestinians. It's wrong. He said, but Joe, we ain't nothing we can do. He said, we can't go against these people because they're God's chosen people. He said, whether we like it or not, the Jews over there, they are God's chosen people. And I said, well, I said, why you say that? He says, Joe, you know, I know they are. He said, Joe, I go to church. He said, my pastor, you know, he teaches me, you know, that these are God's chosen people, and we got to support them no matter what. I said, because your pastor, mm-hmm. where did your pastor go to school? He went to these white seminary schools. They teach that filth and garbage. I said, brother, they ain't nothing but white devils. That's all they all over there. I said, they not no chosen people, no book. I said, they're but Europeans over there masquerading as Jews. They ain't no true Jews. And when I said it to mm-hmm. him, he had this shocked look on his face, like, wow, you know, he just couldn't believe I was saying that and stuff. And I could see as I talked to him, he was really stunned. And he was like saying, well, Joe, I didn't know all that, but I thought that they was the people and stuff. So my point, Brother Obi, this is what you're dealing with when you're done with that question of so-called Jews and stuff like that, or the chosen people of the book. So that's why Harry Belafonte and others may suffer from that same sickness, bro. That's all I'm saying. You know?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, and the only thing I have to say to that real quickly, I won't argue with you at all, but I'm going to say, like we said earlier, there's a difference between rape and consent. And as a matter of fact, one of the things we feel that Mr. Belafonte is obligated to address before he transitions, they say he's very ill, we hope he's healthy as possible. One of the only blemishes on Dr. King's record is he supported Israel in the Six-Day War.
Yes.
Now this mm-hmm. is Dr. King, who would not go near Robert Williams mm-hmm. in Monroe, North Carolina, who would not go near the Deacons for Defense in Louisiana, who would not go near the, who, as a matter of fact, was only assassinated in Memphis because he went to do wrong what he felt, right what he thought was a wrong, when the young people down there decided to retaliate violently to naked terrorists. So how would Dr. King, the most peaceful man our movement has produced in the last 75 years, no way he could be on the side of Israel unless someone like Belafonte was coercing him to do so. And one more thing on Belafonte. Interestingly enough, if you look at his memoirs, that was a New York bestseller, he attacked Acme Sekou-Touré, he attacked mm-hmm. Kwame Ture, and he attacked Mary McKeever. Acme Sekou-Touré played a very crucial role in the UN resolution, Zionism is Racism, 3379. But when, and Harry Belafonte in the past, he would tell people how he took SNCC to Guinea in 1964 to take them out of Mississippi just to clear their head. So people thought that that was an act in solidarity with the Guinean Revolution. But we have learned later, thanks to him, feeling that when he reached his age, you can just admit, tell it all. He was summoned by Kennedy to go there as an emissary for the United States Peace Corps mm-hmm. to develop a cultural exchange program between the State Department and the Guinean dancers and drummers. And Sekou-Touré was not trusting of the process, initially agreed to it diplomatically, but when he recognized what a fraud it was, he discontinued the relationship. So okay. even when he went to Africa to throw arms around Sekou-Touré, it was not a son of Africa coming home to embrace his brother in Africa. It was marching to the drum of Kennedy. And sure. once again, this is the Peace Corps established the same time the United States Agency for Internet. That's why we feel the time has come to publicly deal with this right next to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan,
yes,
right
sir.
Next to Belafonte, and right next to Cornel West. And once again, it's not a debate, because debates have antagonistic overtones. It took Dr. Leonard Jeffries 3 years to be comfortable enough to be on the show with us to deal with the Kwame Nkrumah question when he
wow.
recognized that we weren't trying to embarrass him or humiliate
yes.
him. We did what we did out of love. So in that same vein, we don't want the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to think that we're trying to humiliate him and embarrass him. My father would be mad at me because my father had audience with the Messenger in 1966, 67. And I teach at Muhammad University of Islam right now.
Praise
so, so this is not a, we helped the Nisa Islam Muhammad, the Washington Bureau Chief of the Final Call, get her interview with Asada Shakur. We helped Saeed Shabazz, the Final Call UN correspondent, interview former President Mugabe of Zimbabwe. So we're comrades, but the time has come to deal with this the way it needs to be dealt with, out in the open.
And let me say this, and I'll go, Brother Obi. I'm so glad you said that, because two things I'll say this, and I'm two or three things, and I'll be real brief. Well, like, for example, see, when you look at these people, you look at how people can make mistakes and use bad judgment. Case of Jim Brown, for example. Now, a lot of people don't know this, and I told this to Brother Elliot. Now, you see how Jim Brown came out, supported Trump, and see, he didn't like what Kaepernick did, saying Kaepernick was unpatriotic. And a brother told me who played a little bit of pro football, who knew Jim Brown well, he told me years ago, he said, because he was a good friend of our late great friend here in this city, Johnny Sample, you know, played for the Super Bowl champion, just a very conscious, activist brother. And the brother told me, he said, Joe, I'm not surprised at Jim's stance, he said, because a lot of people are under the impression, he said, when Jim was with Muhammad Ali, when you saw that, you see that picture of Jim Brown and Muhammad Ali and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar when Ali was refusing to fight for the United States government. He said, people think that Jim was going to support Ali. He said, but actually Jim was going there because Jim got this strange sense of patriotism. He was going there to turn Ali around and try to get Ali to fight and to not denounce the war and all that stuff. And Ali turned him around. Ali been a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, said, nah, bro, I'm doing what I'm doing and stuff. So Ali had to straighten Jim out.
And different things happen at different times, which we also understand that one of the things that happens is that we're politically domesticated. So
exactly.
Jim Brown may feel that fighting in the United States is the most important thing on the agenda. But interestingly enough, if that's his sentiment, he is compatible in thinking with Colin Kaepernick. Because the first question that Colin Kaepernick was asked in his first press conference is, are you against the military? And he said, no, sir. The military keeps him safe. The military keeps him protected. And this is why he hesitated to say, you are the police of the world. And in the 1990s, the 90s generation shut the United States down over the question of Rodney King, we let it be known that what we were doing was in harmony with the movement in Africa to get rid of U.S. finance, European Union finance, military dictatorships. Babangida and Abacha in Nigeria were shown the door. Mengistu in Ethiopia were shown the door because of the Eritreans. Traore in Mali were shown the door. Mobutu were shown the door. Renamo in Mozambique and UNITA in Angola were destabilized. Well, we let it be known. So the fight to end police terrorism and you saw the United States borders is part of the same struggle to eliminate the U.S. Africa military command, commonly referred to as AFRICOM. So if Kaepernick is willing to only go as far as the donut eaters, that's perfectly okay. We'll take it to the next level because history obligates us to do so. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Joe.
You're welcome. But can I say one thing real quick, Elliot? I'll be real quick on Minister Farrakhan and John Henry Clark. See, again, that's why I say people, again, they can use bad judgment. See, I don't know if you were familiar with this, Brother Obi. The day that Malcolm was killed back in 65, and I have a lot of respect for John Henry, even though I don't agree with John Henry Clark on some things he says about Islam, but I'm mature enough and big enough to still, you know, look at the big pictures and appreciate his contributions to our people. Well, John Henry Clark, the day Malcolm was killed, you know, John Henry Clark was supposed to be friends with Malcolm. I don't deny that at all. But again, how people can make mistakes and use bad judgment. The day Malcolm was killed, John Henry Clark was speaking among the group of
we losing your. No, we lose.
Go ahead.
And this, you can fact check this. He was against Malcolm. He had trashed Malcolm. He had called Malcolm an anti-Semite. He called Malcolm all these hateful things and stuff like that. Well, when before John Henry Clark was scheduled to speak, some whispered in his eye that Malcolm just got assassinated.
You called
John Henry Clark. Back and went to the restroom and cried like he bored his eyeballs out because I guess the guilt and everything saying I'm speaking to these people who done trashed my friend Malcolm and just learned the man was killed and stuff. So again, my only point I'm saying is that people can make bad judgments and stuff, you know what I mean? And let me say this on Minister Farrakhan, and I love the minister. Again, nobody's infallible. Now on this minister thing, I'm glad you put that up.
Joe, we got to wind it down, man. Thanks for your call.
Okay, I
talk
with you later on about that. No problem.
Right. All right. Brother Obi, I know that there's some events upcoming. Before we leave the air, we got a couple more minutes. The floor is yours. Okay. You can let everybody know what's going on.
Like we said, for people who are listening, one of the things that we consider a problematic in our community right now, just in terms of this within the movement, there are people who, which we have no problem with, people celebrate Kwanzaa with intense enthusiasm. This is the work of Maulana Karenga and us and that network. Now, what we're saying is, at what point are we going to celebrate African Liberation Day with that same enthusiasm?
Mm-hmm.
And if there are people who share that sentiment and feel that that is part of the struggle to make our cultural and political expression synonymous, this is what we recommend. We want you, if you work with children, we're doing a play called 1925, and it's about the childhood of Brother Malcolm, Frantz Fanon, and Patrice Lumumba, all born in 1925. So to your listeners listening all over the country, if they're interested in putting that play on, once we finish the script, which should be finished any day now, and we get it edited, we will send it to you. If you have a theater ensemble, or if you would like to start a branch of the Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company in your areas, and this play would be your coming out party, please get in touch with us. We definitely think that that is work. And we say that right now because many people think that defending the intellectual merit of the objectives of Pan-Africanism is all we're obligated to do. So,
And what's going to be the date of that?
That's what, and it's African Liberation Day weekend, May 25th.
Okay.
So that you would they would have time to prepare the children to put it on. So we're just saying that if people want to see African Liberation Day have more dimension, have more substance, begin to incorporate methodology, as many people feel that this era is the bastardization of methodology, where there's a significant disparity between theory and practice, between those who articulate ideas and those who execute ideas, people can start a branch of the Mass Emphasis Children's History and Theater Company. They don't need to look at taking on the logistical nightmare of bringing our children from D.C. to their area. They can put on the play where they are, and they can start a branch of the company, or if they have a theater company of children who already perform on a regular basis, they would like, perhaps they would consider performing this play.
Brother Obi, I want to thank you for being with us. Two things. I'm going to get in touch with you later on in the week, probably midweek, mm-hmm. about the article that you sent me. I shared it with Brother Richard. And plus, I'm going to talk mm-hmm. to Brother Richard about the idea of the community forum and can put that together.
And I'm glad we didn't go too much into that, because that will be awesome if that takes place. Every time we come to Philly now, we want to come with a bang, too, because we're building some key relations in Philly, of course, with you. We've been working with you now for about 4 years. We've been working with our brother Shamari for a couple of years there. Our sister, Sister Empress, we've been working with her for about 5 years now. And Malefi Asante has been promising to bring us to Philly for about 6 or 7 years now. But it's okay. Yeah. But so we definitely want to work on the ground in Philly, and it looks like we're moving in that direction. So we look forward to working with the children at Mastery to do the play, and we hope that leads to a branch of our theater company. And we also want to once again thank Russell Schultz, our brother, for making that happen. And we thank you for always extending this platform to us. We're always humbled to be on. And we sincerely hope that what we shared met your satisfaction. And also, we hope we did better with allowing you to ask more questions this time.
I'll be in touch, brother.
I definitely was pleased, and because we don't get this type of analysis, this type of input, especially as it relates to the Southern Hemisphere, Africa in particular, and it's so needed. There used to be an abundance of this kind of information around that you can pick up, newspapers, magazines, places that people who were bringing information back to us. Now for me, it seems like it's dry, so I'm definitely appreciative of you helping us get clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Brother Obi, we'll talk soon.
Thank you, sir.
Peace.
Take care. All right.
Peace. Richard, interesting conversation tonight. A lot of information given out to the Time for Awakening audience in reference to what's going on internationally and how it directly impacts and affects us. And especially some of that information dealing with Venezuela that I had no clue about.
One thing I keep walking away with, Elliot, and it may be my own arrogance in saying this, that we as Africans in North America definitely aren't as, no matter what side we're on, we don't have a breadth of understanding of foreign policy. You know,
yeah.
Being in this country, I mean, you hear so much about the domestic policy and domestic things that are going on, and it kind of, even in this metaphor of the wall, kind of the bring of keeping us out. But when it gets to the foreign policy and that we being here are really the implementers by just not giving it voice one way or another, are allowing for Pence and them to speak so blatantly, or Obama and them to put troops on the ground so so in your face. And I think brother kind of really made it clear that where before the CIA did it it was in the dark, these guys are doing it like right in your face, and we ain't got nothing to say.
And that's intentional, Richard, that they basically instruct these black quote unquote leaders not to talk about these type of issues. You're so caught up with police brutality and mass incarceration that you don't talk about these other issues. They're off limits to you. But if you turn around, go ahead.
Too. I mean, they're all related. I mean, what is happening locally is happening globally.
Yes.
And it's not, and the president, it's responsibility, the president's primary responsibility is the chief executive of the military. Not all this the domestic stuff is the Congress and the Senate, but the military, and these events that's happening in the Southern Hemisphere, it's because of those institutions and those think tanks that are developing those people to do these here right in your face regime changes, right in your face economic starvation, and then blaming it on the people.
And before we wind things up and not give the line for the week, the more and more that we talk about these issues with people that are involved and that are working. And see, that's the thing, Richard. That's why on Time for Awakening, we always try to have guests that are doing these things that they're talking about. I mean, it's all right to have ideas. I got ideas. You have some, too. But you bring people on that got a track record of working, then they can tell you their experience of doing different stuff and working with people. Like Whitney gave that example of already working with men in Venezuela for a number of years and pointing out the people he was working with and set up other things for them to come here and talk. They wanted to go to academia, some of the black colleges, and he said, no, come to some of these other venues. I mean, those are men that are working. And when I say that, the reason I'm saying it, because when you talk to some of these men that are working out here, they can let you know that when you're talking about some of these people, including Obama, who some of our people want to rain accolades on, you can see that these people were no friends to our struggle, to black folks' struggle here. They were no friends to that. They gave a charade that they were friends to black people, sing Al Green and make comments about girls twerking and all that type of stuff. Maybe that fools some people. But when you look at some of those people work and their track record, they were no friends to our struggle. I just wanted to throw that out there in relation to some of the things he talked about this evening. Go ahead. Good. Say that. I'd cut across.
No, I just said it's definitely important. I agree with you.
Before we leave this evening, I want to give the lineup. It's Time for Awakening, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Brother Oshie on African Perspectives. Always interesting dialogue and discussions on African Perspectives with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Later on Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. From 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black365.com with Sister Nataki and Brother Talib. Although in the second season, I don't think Brother Talib will be with Sister Nataki. I think she'll be flying solo. But season 2 will be prepared soon. I just talked with Sister Nataki a little while ago. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Sister POC with Revive from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. And Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing,